The following program is pre-recorded. From Buck Studio at Wisconsin Public Radio, this is Zorba Pastor on Your Health. I'm Tom Clark, here again with Family Doc Zorba Pastor to talk with you about what's new in healthy living, share some down-to-earth advice and great lifestyle tips to help you enjoy a longer, sweeter life. If you have a question for the good doc, the number to call is 800-462-7413. And along with your calls, we have some topics to talk about, Zorba.
Colds in the wintertime. Why do we get them? What can we do about them? Everyone wants to know about colds because nobody wants to have a cold. And you know when you get the common cold and it happens to you, it's not common. It's like the worst cold I ever had. It's unique. And then probiotic bacteria may help people with bad breath. Halitosis, the bane. Don't you remember when you were in high school, halitosis was like a topic?
No, I don't.
Well, do you remember high school?
I do remember high school.
And we have a great, wonderful recipe. Tom, I know how much you love it. Avocado breakfast tacos. I know avocado just sings to your heart, right? You love avocados, don't you?
Well...
Anyway, if you love avocados, you will love this recipe.
Okay, to the phones we go now, Zorba, at 1-800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. Our first caller now joins us from Menominee, Wisconsin. Hi.
Well, hey, folks. I'll tell you, this Lyme disease, I've had it 3 times now.
Wow, and, 3 times?
Yes, sir. And I've had 2-3 rounds of different antibiotics.
Mm-hmm.
I still have the rash under my left breast and on my back.
Uh-huh.
And I talked to my doctor. I said, what happens if I get it again?
Yeah, right.
He said, we're going to refer you to an infectious disease specialist. I am terrified.
Uh-huh. Well, first of all, when's the first time you actually had it?
August of last summer.
And this was proven, in other words, tell me how the test was done. Who did the test? Your doctor?
Well, they did an initial blood test. When as soon as Doc saw the big red patch on my knee, he ordered the doxycycline right away.
Got you. And then they did the initial blood test, and then they did the secondary blood test?
I believe so. They tested for Lyme, and they did a panel.
A panel, Got it.
Yes.
Got it. Yes. For other things, they may mimic that. Okay. Got it. And then, so you've had a recurrence of what? The rash or what kind of symptoms did you have?
Well, I had a recurrence of the rash at a different site from a second tick bite, they believe. And then it started all over again. It was summer of last year, and then I got through the winter, and then in the spring it came back again. Uh-huh. And I had another rash.
So you're getting recurrent tick bites. Are you a forest ranger or something like that?
I teach horseback riding, and I'm a gardener, and I'm German Lutheran type triple A. I don't ever sleep. I'm always working.
You see, there we go. It's something like that. Well, there are a couple things. First of all, I think you should go to an infectious disease doc. Absolutely, 100%. You know, that and rheumatologists also often deal with recurrent Lyme disease. The real question is the rash coming back? Do you still have an infection in there? Or are you just having a response, sort of a post-inflammatory response from the infection that was there in the first place? So now when it comes back, is the rash coming back? Is the blood test showing something different? How is it manifesting? Just in a rash or arthritis? What's going on?
I've had the rash since the first initial infection.
Mm-hmm.
What happens is the second and third round, I just knew by the way I felt. Doc, I have never felt so miserable in my life.
Uh-huh.
And I knew as soon as I felt that lethargy and the I don't care, I don't want to eat. I don't care about life.
So you're really having lots of different symptoms. Okay.
It's horrible.
Okay. I have a recommendation. I think you should see an infectious disease doctor. 100%.
Okay.
That's what you need.
Okay.
Because you've got to find out, hey, is this a recurrence or is it one disease that simply has not been fully eradicated? What can I do about it? You need to have doxycycline with you. So if you get a tick bite, you take 200 milligrams at the onset of a tick bite.
Okay.
And you've got to check yourself when you're, you know, in the garden pretty much every night, because a tick that stays on you for more than, really for about 48 hours can transfer it. If it's less than 24 hours or less, it doesn't transfer that. But then you really want an ID doc to see whether or not other panels are going on. And if they don't have the full answer and you're getting the rash again, then you want to go to a dermatologist to see if the rash is due to something else that's going on in your body.
Sure. I got it.
You know,
now, are you basing this suggestion on the fact that I still have the rash, or are you basing it on just the fact that I could just start feeling horrible again, or both?
It's both. I'm basing it on both. And I'm basing it on the fact that you called this number. In other words, yes. Talk to me.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I don't want to go through this again. It's the worst I've ever felt. And I've been through the mill in my 64 years.
Yeah. Well, like I said, you're not a forest ranger, but you love being in the garden. That's what counts.
Yes, sir.
So, good luck. Get an ID consult. That's what I would recommend.
What did you call that?
An infectious disease consult.
Got it. Okay. I will do that, doctor. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thanks for your call.
Thank you very much for the call. 800-462-7413 is our number. If you have a question for the good doc, 800-462-7413. Zorba, before our next call, scientists finally know why people get more colds and flu in the winter.
Right. It's kind of interesting. Now, when was the last time you had a cold?
It's been a while.
Do you get them every winter or not?
No.
So you don't get them. You don't get them every winter. You know, whenever I have a cold and I feel awful, and I always say, this is the worst cold I've ever had. You know what my wife says?
No.
She says, you say that every time you get a cold. That's what she goes. Says, you always say it's the worst cold. You know what it is. Because, and I'm around, you know, especially when I worked full time, I was around people with colds all the time, you know, without wearing masks. But it's interesting. I've always assumed that one of the reasons we get more colds in the winter is it's colder in the winter, it's darker, and people are indoors.
Yeah.
You know, which
well,
I think.
I'm old now, and I
you
think
are.
When you get old, you don't have as many colds. You got enough other bad stuff
going on. There are the things that bother you more than colds.
Yeah.
That's right. Arthritis, difficulty walking, can't remember where I put my keys.
Exactly.
You know, the other usual stuff. I just checked for my keys, by the way, when I said it to make sure they were in my pocket. Anyway. Getting back to colds.
Yeah.
So one theory, which I think is the case, that you're in closer proximity with other people. We know, by the way, there were fewer colds last year and the year before because of COVID and people were in masks. They weren't around each other. But there may be a biological molecular explanation from this, according to a professor of otolaryngology at Stanford. And reducing the temperature inside the nose by as much as 9 degrees apparently kills 50% of the billions of bacterial and viral fighting cells in our nostrils. So think about a time you're close to somebody, your first defense is in your nose. In other words, when you breathe it in and you've got all these great – you don't think about your nose much, do you?
No. I don't.
You're laughing. You know, so Jimmy Durante must have never had a cold, right, because he had that big
yeah,
nose.
Yeah.
Anyway – your nose, and it appears that when the temperature is down, these bacteria that they actually live in your nose, the cells rather that fight the bacteria that live in the nose, don't do very well. They're not as active. They're not taking care. They're not actually producing what things called extracellular vesicles that actually take care of the viruses and bacteria in the nose. So the problem is the nose is too cold. That's what we think. Maybe it's
the
not just that.
The nose is too cold.
So I've got an answer, and I've got something that will make me $1 billion.
Some kind of thing that comes over your nose?
That's right, and heats it. A little battery-powered device in the wintertime that you go around. We just have to get some, you know, we have to get somebody like Brad Pitt to wear it that goes over the nose that will keep the nose warm and will keep you from getting colds. And then we've got to make it stylish so you can have expensive ones for people.
Yeah, right.
What do you...
Good idea.
Anyway, it's the cold air in the nose that actually reduces the ability of the nose to fight colds, and that's why we get sick in the wintertime. Maybe my mom was right when she said, shut the window, you'll get a draft, you'll die of a cold.
Your mom really said that to you?
She did.
I don't believe she it. Did.
No, you know, come on. Do I lie? Do I look like I lie?
No,
I
mean, no, you never,
never
lie.
Never,
no,
you, never, yeah. never.
800-462-7413 is our number. 1-800-462-7413. Now, Zorba, we have a voicemail from Knoxville, Tennessee.
I would like to know if there is anything that can be done for poor circulation, particularly in my feet. What can be done for the poor circulation? Thank you.
Well, poor circulation can mean a lot of things. So if it's arterial circulation, in other words, if you've got bad arteries going to your knees or your legs, it can be very serious and actually can cause you to amputate, like toes and feet can be amputated from a very poor circulation. But most people, when they complain about circulation, and that circulation, you know, because it's extremely painful. Remember when you were a kid? You would get up, Tom, and you would say, my foot's asleep, and it would hurt, and it was painful. Do you remember that at all?
No.
You know something? You are so old.
Yeah.
Can't remember.
Ask me about something like 5 years ago.
Do you remember when you were a child? Can you think back that far? But anyway, do you remember when you were a kid, and you'd say, hey, my foot's asleep, and it would be painful, and you'd have to bang it?
Yeah, the whole pins and needles, yep. Sure.
Right. That was because you cut off the circulation of your foot. That was the beginning of an arterial problem. And people with serious circulatory problems have that all the time, and they often need surgery or something else. But other people, most people, when they say their circulation is poor, it's a venous problem. And the way to solve that is actually often to wear support stockings. And you can get minimal support stockings, moderate or serious. You can go to the web. You can get them on the web. And they often will help circulation. And they also keep your leg warmer. That can make a difference. And the other thing is to double sock in your foot, because double socks in your feet will keep your foot warmer, and that will help improve the venous circulation. The final thing to do is get up and walk. If you're sitting at your desk all day, you're not moving very much, you're not getting your circulation going, getting up and walking can also make a difference.
800-462-7413 is our number. 1-800-462-7413.
You did that really well. Really, I'm a fan of that number.
1-800-462-7413 is our number. That's 1-800-462-7413. Now, before we take a short break, Zorba, let's check in with your favorite hair splitters and fault finders, the Grammar Police. Actually, Zorba, we're going to hear from what is arguably the most meticulous faction within the Grammar Police, the Pronunciation Police.
Oh, my goodness.
Remember them, Zorba?
Again.
They're tough. The following interaction came to
they
us.
They are tough.
Came to us from Marie in Grand Island, New York.
Hello, Dr. Zorba. You really stepped in it as you corrected Tom in his pronunciation of Ecclesiastes. You said it was pronounced Ecclesiastes, which is a six-syllable word that you might be confusing with Ecclesiasticus. That would be from the Apocrypha, or hidden book, which was written by a man named Jesus Sirach. Ecclesiastes was written, five syllables, Ecclesiastes was written by King Solomon, and it is within the canonized scriptures.
but I do admire your confidence in correcting Tom. However, it is Ecclesiastes. Thank you.
Can you come here every week?
That's right. That's
right. I mean, you know a lot.
That's right. She should be here. And as we're talking, she should have something like hold up a flag like a referee and say, wrong word, didn't do it right, too many syllables.
Did Zorba mispronounce something on the program? Set him straight by posting on our Facebook page, or you could always send us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org.
We have more of your calls coming up, more listener emails, and Zorba will be cooking up some tasty breakfast tacos. All coming up on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI. No. We have more of your calls coming up, more listener emails, and Zorba will be cooking up some tasty breakfast tacos. All coming up on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRX, the Public Radio Exchange. Tom Clark here with Family Doc Zorba Pastor on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. Before our next call, Zorba, recipe time, avocado breakfast tacos.
I know how much you love avocados. I know that. I'm looking at your face right now, and I can just tell avocado makes you smile.
Yeah, I haven't had avocado in so long.
So you don't even...
I've forgotten what it tastes like.
I mean, the reality is I never had avocado as a kid. But if you love avocados, this recipe is for you, okay?
Let's do it.
And you need avocados. So we're gonna mix it with something else. The first ingredient is 4 pieces of bacon.
4 pieces bacon.
Now, do you love bacon?
Love is a strong word.
Love is a strong word. Now, I know you love Monica. I just want to know if you love bacon. It's a different...
Okay. I love Monica more than I love bacon.
Well, it starts out with 4 pieces of bacon. Now, you've got to choose the right bacon. I happen to like Newski's bacon. It's like the best bacon, more expensive than I normally buy. But if I'm looking for a special bacon, made in Wisconsin, always sort of the number one bacon at fancy restaurants in New York City.
What's it called?
Newski's bacon. Oh, okay. It's made. Obviously, you don't really bacon to you is just bacon, right?
Yeah.
Right. Anyway, 4 pieces of bacon.
4 pieces of bacon.
2 green onions sliced with the green and white parts separated. Got to separate them out.
2 green onions sliced with the green and white peppers separated.
That's right. The parts separated. Parts. 1 small red bell pepper finely diced.
1 small red pepper finely diced.
1 tablespoonful of extra virgin olive oil.
A big tea, extra virgin olive oil.
4 large eggs.
4 large eggs.
1/2 cup shredded cheddar cheese.
1/2 cup shredded cheddar cheese.
1/2 avocado smally diced.
1/2 avocado.
Smally diced.
Small diced.
Diced, small, smally diced. The grammar police, no, the pronunciation police are going to get me on that. Sorry, guys, I did correct it. Some salt and pepper.
Salt and pepper.
2 tablespoonfuls of chopped cilantro on the side, because some people don't like cilantro.
2 tablespoons chopped cilantro.
That's right, on the side, very important. And 4 6-inch tortillas.
4 6-inch tortilla.
Now, I know this recipe excited you, Tom. I can just tell. It just really, that's right to sleep. All right, let's make it. Yeah. Preheat the oven to 400 degrees. Place the bacon on a baking tray. Bake for 18 to 20 minutes until it's crispy and let it dry on a paper towel. And, of course, you can make it the old-fashioned way in a frying pan if you want to, or you can make it the way I make it in a microwave-safe dish. Whatever way you want to make it, make that bacon. Then heat the olive oil in a pan under medium heat. Add the white parts of the green onion and the red bell pepper. Sauté for 1 minute. Whisk the eggs in a bowl. Then pour the beaten eggs into the pan. Use a spatula to move the eggs around as they cook, flipping them a few times until they're soft and pillowy and cook through just the way you like it. Now, assemble the breakfast tacos by adding a portion of the eggs to the tortilla. Top it with a sprinkle of the green parts of the green onion and several pieces of crumbled bacon, a little bit of the diced avocado, a sprinkle of cheddar cheese, and if you want to, the fresh cilantro, and you've got a wonderful avocado breakfast tortilla.
And this is serving 4 tacos.
That's right, which will serve 4 people or 1 person who wants to eat 4 tacos.
A lot, yeah.
That's right. Now, do you think anyone would like a copy of this recipe?
Well, if you say so.
If you want a copy, go to Zorba Pastor on Your Health. That's Zorba Pastor on Your Health. Or, of course, you can find us through Facebook.
800-462-7413 is our number. 1-800-462-7413. And let's see if we can help a listener now, Zorba, in El Paso, Texas. Hi.
Hi, guys. I did gastric sleeve a few years ago, and I just wanted to see if Dr. Zorba had any advice with that. I've continued to maintain pretty much my weight loss and have started a little bit not taking my vitamins.
Right.
And I wanted to see if, you know, I know it's probably not a good idea, but
let's go back for a second. Uh-huh. So you did the gastric sleeve in order to lose weight. How much weight did you lose?
I lost about 60 pounds.
Wow. That's pretty impressive. That's really impressive. Now, I just want to go a little bit before you had that. What sort of counseling did you have before the surgery?
To be honest, I really didn't have great counseling.
You didn't have great counseling. Did you know a lot about eating, or what wasn't great about the counseling? Because the counseling can be very important for some people. Why was it not great?
I think I didn't understand the full full depth of what I needed to really take in, like what was the protein, what was the, you know, what amounts. I still wasn't 100% clear even afterwards. So I believe, you know, I wasn't set up perfectly with that, with the nutrition.
So how'd you do it afterwards? Because you lost the weight afterwards. How'd you get, did you go get the information on the net? How did you?
I felt like they taught me a lot better after I actually had the surgery.
After the surgery, okay. Okay.
Yes, after the surgery, it seemed like it was more clear. Mm-hmm. And honestly, disconnecting the emotional eating was a big struggle for me, too.
Of course. I mean, there are a lot of people that have the surgery and fail. I mean, because they don't, because for many, many reasons, but many reasons among them, you know, not being able to disconnect to make sure that you get rid of the other emotional eating. So you have succeeded. But I want to ask a question. Why would you stop the vitamins?
I guess you feel like you, as you are able to eat more, you're taking in enough. But
maybe.
I don't know if that's really true.
No, I don't think so. And I'll tell you why. You may not be absorbing the way I absorb. I don't have a gastric sleeve, so if I eat the proper nutrition, I'm going to get the right vitamins. But because you have, you know, your alimentary tract, that's the tract that we use to digest, because that's been changed, the vitamins, which are inexpensive, they're not difficult to take, you want to make sure that you get enough of those vitamins. So the answer is you're probably right. You're getting enough vitamins, but you're eating. But you may not be right every single day. In other words, if you take those vitamins every single day, they're easy. You just take the pills, you take the vitamins, then you know they're going to be in the system. And I am not big on people taking vitamins who have normal eating because there's been no data that it really works. But I am big on people taking vitamins whenever they have any kind of a weight loss surgery.
Okay.
It's easy, cheap, inexpensive. It doesn't matter when you take it in the morning or in the evening. What do you take? What sort of vitamins are you taking? Should you be taking? Not what are you taking? What should you be taking?
Well, I have like the specific multivitamin that's for and with iron.
With iron.
So,
okay.
Yes. So I actually ran out of them and didn't bother to renew them. So I started just taking like every so often, not regularly, taking just regular adult vitamins. But I know I'm supposed to have more the ones that are more specific for bariatric patients.
Exactly. And you really want to do it. And because you want to stay healthy. And frankly, it's sort of part of staying healthy for the rest of your life, because we know that it's a really important thing. But I want to get back on the fact you have been successful because you were able to get rid of the emotional. Tell me a little bit about the emotional eating. I'm very interested in that.
I mean, I saw that I would actually... You know, when I felt stressed or when I felt something, you know, I would actually just eat, you know, or I would go to certain restaurants, namely McDonald's, you know, and I never really thought about it, but really it was a coping mechanism for me. And it was kind of just like a, you know, I just never associated the two. I always thought, oh, I just like to eat a lot, you know, but I didn't associate how much those, like, you know, having certain foods really did bring me some sort of comfort and did kind of provide some sort of like relaxation almost, you know, but then of course afterwards comes the guilt and all the bad stuff.
So you were able with counseling or on your own to get through that?
With counseling for sure. Mm-hmm.
So you hit a very important part of it. The very important part of it with bariatric surgery is the proper counseling to be able to then unlink some of the habits that you had that produced overweight in the first place. And I want to congratulate you on being successful, because not everyone with this surgery is successful, and you've done it.
I hope so, but I worry because now that I'm able to eat more, I tend to push it a little bit more, and I have started gaining a little bit of weight as well. So.
You got it. You know something? It's a lifelong habit and a lifelong change, and you're on top of it. And having worry to make sure you don't go into that where you start gaining weight is actually very important, because you know that there's always that possibility, and so you've got to be vigilant for the rest of your life. But congratulations, 60 pounds, that's a ton of weight. You must feel so much better.
Yes, honestly, that's the biggest benefit. I can't tell you how I wish it for other people. I wish there was a way to just kind of like reduce our stomach size as we go through our life and just kind of adjust it as we get older. But because it's so much easier to just get around, you know, and I never appreciated how different that is.
Yes. Well, congratulations. And take your vitamins. Take your vitamins. Okay. Thanks for your call.
Thank you, Dr. Zorba.
Thanks
Have
for
a great
sharing.
Day.
You too.
800-462-7413 is our number. 1-800-462-7413. We have a voicemail now, Zorba, from Pewaukee, Wisconsin.
I have never had chicken pox in my life. I'm 67 years old. My doctor is pushing for me to have the shingles vaccine, and yet I have never had chickenpox. I've been exposed to it several times. I am wondering if indeed it is important for me to have that vaccine when I have not had chickenpox. Thank you.
Well, it's quite interesting. First of all, she might have had chickenpox. She could have had one pox. I mean, some actually have a very mild case of chickenpox, and she could tell whether or not, you can tell whether or not you had chicken pox with a blood test, because there's a blood test to find out whether or not you were immune to chicken pox. So her doctor could actually take a blood test and see if she ever had chicken pox. And if she has, you know, if she's never had any antibodies to chicken pox, then she probably doesn't need the shingles, you know, the shingles shot. On the other hand, there's always on the other hand. Mm-hmm. The tests are not perfect. In other words, there's always a false negative and a false positive. So, you know, if you've got antibodies to the chickenpox virus, then you probably had, then you know you had chickenpox. But if you don't, then should you have the chickenpox vaccine? So, if you are, or rather the shingles vaccine. So if she doesn't want to take the shingles vaccine, then she should say, I want an antibody test to see if I had chickenpox, then make a decision. If you've had antibodies, then you should get the vaccine. Or you could say, okay, I'll just get the shingles vaccine because I just want to be super safe. The shingles vaccine is not necessary for anyone who never had chickenpox. And people had varicella injections to keep them from getting chickenpox. And they've been around, chickenpox vaccine has been around for at least 25 years. They will never get shingles, ever, ever, ever.
800-462-7413 is our number. Before the break, you're not going to believe this, Zorba, but not everyone agrees with you. So let's do the segment where we give one of
Not everyone critics, agrees with me?
No.
Really?
Well, this one person.
One person. Yeah. Okay. This one person. Thank you. Thank you. Okay. So that person doesn't.
We're going to do the segment now where you give one of your critics some airtime.
Okay.
This is Disagreeing with the Doc.
Disagreeing with the Doc.
The following email came from Claudia, who writes, "Hello, I've been tuning into the show whenever I can and have been impressed with the sound and sensible advice that Dr. Pastor gives.
Nice.
That's why I was really surprised and very disappointed to hear him advise taking Aleve, 2 tablets, 2 times a day, almost indefinitely. Having worked for a pharmaceutical company for 20 years, I know that all drugs, over-the-counter or not, carry potential risks, especially if they're not taken as the label indicates. Aleve is a very powerful NSAID, which at one time was prescription only until the FDA approved going over-the-counter, which, of course, dramatically increased the profit for the company. Most people are very trusting and assume if you don't need a prescription,
that's right.
It might be safe to hear Dr. Pastor give the advice over the air was very upsetting, and I just wanted to share my concerns with you."
Well, thank you. Thank you for your concern. Now, let's talk about naproxen, which is Aleve. First of all, it's a generic, so it's cheap and it's inexpensive. So when it actually went over the counter, I think it was a generic at that time, and then somebody branded it as Aleve, but anyone could make Aleve at that time. But anyway, it's a generic at this time. When the FDA approved it as an over-the-counter drug, just like ibuprofen, they approved it at half the maximal dose. So in other words, for Aleve, it's 220 milligrams, and they say 1 tablet twice daily. And a common prescription strength for naproxen was 500 milligrams twice daily. So 2 Aleve twice daily approaches a common prescription strength. Now, can you take it every day for the rest of your life? No, she's 100% correct. And I really don't recommend that people necessarily take it indefinitely. But I do recommend that a lot of people take it on a regular basis because it helps their arthritis. And that allows them to move and feel better and improves quality of life. And that's where all drugs you take, over-the-counter or prescription, which help alleviate pain, and it's a typical anti-inflammatory. It's not any more powerful than ibuprofen, any more powerful than most of the other anti-inflammatories. But if they improve your quality of life, then you have to look at how do you actually monitor it. Do you do kidney function tests, which is what we often do? And as we get to be older in time, you're one of those older people in life. You may not take the same dosage, and that's where you need a healthcare professional, a doctor, a nurse practitioner, an advanced healthcare provider to look and say, can I take that Aleve twice a day? Is it safe for me? And you make make a decision with that. But I think she has a good point. Over-the-counter drugs taken on a regular basis may also have side effects and should not be taken willy-nilly. And that's where you need to have an advocate to figure out what's right for you.
Mm. Do you disagree with the good doc? Just post on our Facebook page or send us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org.
More of your calls coming up, another interesting topic to discuss, and Zorba will be answering more of your emails, all coming up on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRX. Tom Clark here with Family Doc Zorba Pastor on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. Before our next call, Zorba, problematic bacteria found in fermented foods might help dispel bad breath.
Right, right. So some people have halitosis. You know, halitosis. Don't you remember teenager? Well, you probably don't remember being a teenager in the first place. But, you know, some teenagers had more halitosis than others, and they would, oh, my God, your breath. And it turns out there's certain bacteria that live in our mouth. And I'm going to give you the – I'm going to do this. Lactobacillus salivaris. Got it?
Okay.
It's on the test.
Whatever that means.
Lactobacillus reuteri, Streptococcus salivaris, and Weissella cibaria may actually work. These are bacteria that you put in your mouth that may actually work to reduce halitosis.
Oh.
In other words, these probiotics. So it turns out that halitosis is from sulfuric compounds that are in your body, and some people just produce more of these sulfur compounds. And they're produced by mouth bacteria because of mixing of food debris. Remember, when you eat, Tom, there's debris in your mouth, right?
Debris in my mouth?
That's right, because you don't swallow everything. It kind of gets stuck in the gums. That's why you brush your teeth. And this food debris are associated with poor dental hygiene, but also some people just have more sort of these sulfur compounds in their mouth. And if you take these probiotic bacteria, Lactobacillus salivaris, Lactobacillus reuteri, I'm not going to pronounce them three or four times, it may reduce these sulfuric compounds. So this is really important stuff because some people are really bothered by it. I mean, they actually have bad breath. And especially if you're dating, when was the last time you dated? I got you on that, didn't I? You got you on that. You know, so especially when you're dating, this is why people use mouthwash. That's why you've got whole counters of mouthwash because they want to do it, but it may be having the right probiotics. So I've got an answer for this. You know what my answer is?
No, I don't.
Fermented foods, yogurt. Yogurt is the best probiotic. Eating yogurt slowly so you have lactobacillus in your mouth may actually help. Also, sourdough bread may also is a probiotic. Miso soup that you can get in Japanese restaurants, but it's actually very easy to make at home, is also basically, these are commented probiotics. But fermented food may also help. And a really good fermented food that we eat in Wisconsin that I know you love, sauerkraut. Sauerkraut may actually help reduce bad breath in your mouth. And if you want to, at almost every store in Wisconsin, you can get kraut juice. So you can actually have sauerkraut juice in the morning to get rid of your bad breath. What do you think?
I think these are solutions to a problem that doesn't exist.
For you, because you're not dating. But for people that are dating, getting rid of that bad breath may be the difference between love and no love.
Did you have bad breath and did people ever say anything to you?
Look, I've been married for 49 and a half years. Do you think I remember whether or not I had bad breath? Obviously, I didn't because look at it. Penny and I obviously dated and have four children, so I must not have bad breath. But I eat yogurt.
Yogurt!
800-462-7413 is our number. 1-800-462-7413. And now, Zorba, let's see if we can help a listener in the Bronx, New York. Hi.
Hello.
How can we help?
My daughter is seeing a naturopathic doctor.
Mm-hmm.
And my daughter happens to have rheumatoid arthritis.
Okay.
And she was doing very well under a rheumatoid doctor down in the city.
Mm-hmm.
However, this naturopathic doctor is teaching her not to listen to medical doctors, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So she's not taking her medications. That's the main thing right now, and she's getting very sick, and she thinks she's going to get better over time.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, she's selling her a lot of supplements. She's getting raw milk.
Mm-hmm.
She's selling her – I listened to a podcast. She has a podcast, and I listened to a couple of things, and it's scary to hear that, for example, I'll give you an example – kidney stone, she says, cannot be checked by a doctor. And they were both laughing, her and her husband. Yeah. So, you know, laughing at the doctors and all these things. And my daughter is getting worse. This is going on for about a year. And I wanted to share it with this with you. And I have a feeling that this is a scam, okay? Because he also, the husband, sells shirts on the podcast.
Of course. And they're selling supplements that they take. That's what they're doing. Is that also the case?
Well, she's selling that not through the podcast, but through the meeting she has with my daughter that pays her. I don't even know how much money.
Right. Of course. Yeah. Well, they're expensive. The supplements they take are very expensive, and they're worthless when it comes to rheumatoid arthritis. Now, they're worthless in and of themselves. So let's talk a little bit about rheumatoid arthritis. It's an autoimmune disease. It's very important to treat it the right way, or you get joint destruction. And joint destruction, you can get weak, you can get pain, you can get permanent joint destruction. We have a number of medications that are new that really work for rheumatoid arthritis. They stop the destructive process. You need a rheumatologist to actually do it. And if your daughter is just going to a naturopath who says, regular doctors are no good, she's going to the wrong place. There's no doubt about it. And she's getting worse. And raw milk.
She doesn't want to hear it.
How old is your daughter?
She's 46. And she has a great, great rheumatologist doctor who had her very healthy. She was really doing fantastically well. And now she's not listening to anybody else.
It's just terrible. And she's getting worse. So what do you say? Do you have a good relationship with your daughter?
Yes.
Is she married? Does she have any children or
anything like that? No, she's not married.
Does she have a job?
Yes, she's a teacher. She's working.
So she's intelligent. She's a teacher. She knows how to gather information. And she's getting worse. How do you think you can bring her into another spot where she goes, maybe I should go back to my rheumatologist? She's getting worse. What do you think? How do you think she's gotten into this scam and still believes it when she's an intelligent teacher who knows about things?
I don't know. She got it probably through a social worker who I believe told her, because she told me too that her son was very sick, and with all these natural things, he got better and he doesn't need medication. So I think she was kind of manipulated in some ways from the social worker who is probably connected with her.
Yeah, she definitely sounds like it was manipulated. Well, here's what you should do. So first of all, you've got to say on a regular basis without, you know, causing any guilt at all, look, you're not getting better. You're actually getting worse. You know, I talked to this doctor on the radio, said naturopathic can work along with regular medical care. In other words, you can go, why don't you try another naturopathic physician? In other words, get a different naturopathic physician. And then you do some research on naturopathic physicians who also work with rheumatologists. In other words, don't say, forget naturopathy and just go back to the rheumatologist. She may not buy that. She may buy that you should go to a naturopathic physician who also works with rheumatologists. And you might talk to the rheumatologist and say, do you know any naturopathic physicians who work with you? And they might have a suggestion of somebody who they work with. Because that's the way to do it. In other words, get her to combine both complementary and alternative medicine with regular medical care. And you might be able to sell it that way with your daughter. But you've got to get her.
That's very good advice. Very good.
You've got to get her off of the grips of this. And the way that won't work is saying, forget naturopathic. Just go look at both of them together. And I would approach the rheumatologist. That's what I would do. Thanks.
Oh my goodness. Thank you so much for the good advice, Dr. Zorba. I appreciate it. By the way, Zorba, a Greek name?
It is a Greek name. It is a Greek name. Yes, it is.
Oh, okay. Great. Zorba the Greek.
Yeah, you got it.
All right. Very good. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. We appreciate the call at 800-462-7413. Okay, Zorba, let's crack open the Zorba Pastor on Your Health inbox now and take a listener email. The following question came from Maggie in Madison, Wisconsin, who writes, hi, Zorba. I love the taste of coffee, but don't usually drink it since I already regularly take prescribed stimulants. On days I don't take my meds, it's nice to indulge. Unfortunately, after one cup of coffee or even a half a cup, I feel nauseous, tired, shaky, weak,
what a shame.
And just plain sick. Why does a little coffee make me feel so sick when my Adderall does not? And why don't I have the same issue after drinking a rare bottle of Coke? Thank you.
Well, first of all, if you're drinking regular coffee with caffeine, it has more caffeine in it than Coke. So that's one issue. Adderall is a stimulant, and some people on Adderall don't tolerate caffeine. So, I mean, I don't know how many milligrams are in Coke of caffeine, but it's minimal compared to a cup of coffee. She could certainly try decaf coffee and see if it works, but the reality is she may not tolerate coffee because it interacts with Adderall. And that's kind of the way it is, in which case this drink is not for you, and you've got to go to, like, decaf tea or an herbal tea blend, something like that.
Mm-hmm. Do you have a health question for the good doc? Just post on our Facebook page or send us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org, or you could write Tom@WPR.org.
That'd be a big help. 800-462-7413 is our number. 1-800-462-7413. Now let's hear a voicemail from a listener in Winona, Minnesota.
Hi, I'm listening right now to the show and love it. Thanks so much for it. Anyway, you recommend gabapentin for restless leg, but I don't know how much. My husband has it and is driving me nuts. In fact, it's driving me to sleep on the couch. Thanks again for the show. It's wonderful. Bye now.
There are a number of drugs for restless legs. So first of all, the anti-Parkinsonian drugs work very well. Requip, R-E-Q-U-I-P, which is now a generic, works well. I think it's like 2 to 4 milligrams. I don't remember the exact dose. But gabapentin also can work well for restless legs. 100 milligrams, 200, 300, up to 600 milligrams a day will work. And you want to take it an hour before you go to sleep. But taking either one of those drugs can make a difference. And frankly, if it's keeping you awake so that you can't sleep with your husband, you've got to find the right drug that works. They are prescription drugs. Call your family doc, find out what works, and try a different drug. If one doesn't work, you try another one and work out the dosage. One dose does not work for everyone. It can be different for different people.
800-462-7413 is our number. 1-800-462-7413. Before we head out, Zorba, we get so many questions from our wonderful listeners.
Wonderful, wonderful.
But we
They're all wonderful.
But.
Every single one.
But. But.
You mean some are not wonderful?
We also get calls from listeners who just want to share a comment or a health tip. So it's time again for the segment we call Caller Comments.
This is a bunch of caller comments. People calling us with their health tips.
Thanks, we appreciate it.
Okay, Zorba. First, let's hear from a listener in Buffalo, New York.
I believe that the reason why carnation and other canned milk is not good for children, one of the reasons is for thickening in the milk, they put carrageenan in there, and carrageenan is red algae, which irritates a lot of people, and I think it caused a lot of people to have allergies. I know I have an allergy to foods that have carrageenan in it, and I'm 65. I think a lot of babies were allergic to it. When they would stop having their bottle, they would cry and cry and cry, and doctors said, mothers don't know how to mix the milk. They're mixing it too thick. And mothers would say, are you kidding? I'm pinching pennies. I make it even thinner. And the babies would cry when they would finish their bottles because they were irritated. I think the fact that they're downplaying the addition of carrageenan in foods is just testimony to them not wanting to admit carrageenan is not good for all humans. Thank you.
So carrageenan, you know, is a food additive that's used that's used. And so she may be intolerant of it. It is commonly used in food. I don't know actually what the prevalence of this particular food allergy is. But getting back to the carnation instant milk, it's not for babies, not instant milk, the carnation, you know, evaporated milk. It was used during the Depression. Formula is completely different in the way it's done. And during the time, you know, recently when there were supply shortages for formula and moms and dads were starting to use this old-fashioned carnation instant milk, a can of carnation of evaporated milk, can of water, and then a tablespoon of Karo syrup. No, you don't use it for babies. It is not good formula, and it's not the carrageenan. It's the whole thing. Don't use it for kids.
And finally, Zorba, here's Kay in Madison, Wisconsin.
Just a comment on the pineapple recipe. Historically, the reason pineapples were the symbol of hospitality is that when the whaling captains would come home from the South Seas, they would stake a pineapple on their front yard so their neighbors would know they were home. So it's a nice festive thing. And actually, the recipe that you had was the classic Chinese recipe, which I highly recommend. They put all the best things in it, and soy sauce makes my muscles feel very good. Thank you.
Oh, how wonderful. I didn't know. I knew that pineapples were a sign of hospitality, and I knew that it was an old sign. So I'm really glad. That is very interesting to know that now. So, and when you want to show people that you're home from whaling, don't you put a pineapple in front of your house?
Always.
Always. That's always. Yeah, always. There we go. There we go. Tom's back from his ship.
Do you have a helpful tip for the show? Just post it on our Facebook page or send us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org.
See you next week, Zorba.
Stay well, Tom.
If you miss anything during the show or just want to stream the show online anytime, visit us on the web
at ZorbaPastor.org, and you can see great pictures of Tom with various smiles and of me, too. So we've got a great website. Come visit us.
Don't forget, you can call us anytime,
24/7.
Leave us your question at
800-462-7413.
Yeah,
I got it.
You got it. Zorba Pastor on Your Health is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's not intended as a medical diagnosis, so please do check with your doc. Our executive producer is Carl Christians.
Hooray!
Our technical director is Brad Kohlberg.
Hooray!
Our theme music is by Leo and Ben Sidran.
Hooray!
For Zorba Pastor, I'm Tom Clark, at least for now, asking you to join us on the next Zorba Pastor on Your Health.
Did you miss something on today's show? Simply go to ZorbaPastor.org to catch up on all things Zorba. There you will find recipes from the show, links to the Facebook page, Zorba's Healthy Living articles, and you can subscribe to the weekly podcast. On the web, that's ZorbaPastor.org.